Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. Here we are. This is the last show for 2011. I'm just going to pause so you can take that in. The last show for the year 2011. When next we speak, the next show will be January 3rd. Wow! 2012, what a concept. Oh my, it's so good to have you with us today. We have one of these shows. Every song was carefully chosen, not only because of the content, but because of the decade. There's some really special songs, couple of albums that my son gave me for Christmas we're going to feature, a couple of tunes from there, and some interesting classics that you haven't heard for a while, and some interesting people, God knows. Speaking of which, Maurice Johnson comes our way next hour. Man, what an interesting guy. One of the coolest guitar players in the world. And he's not only a guitar player. When you find out the background of this guy, he is an honest-to-goodness Renaissance man. You'll find out all about him. And, interesting, we're going to start out with Don Mark on saxophone and Fire Escape from Don's In a New Light CD. The man you hear in the background right now is part of Fire Escape. Daoud Saeed is playing that keyboard. You're about to hear him again on Jubilation on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Check it out.
I'll play the street light.
Oh, that girl could tempt you back to the street life, couldn't she? Randy Crawford with the Crusaders. What a trail out. Let me tell you something. 2012 looks really good. If you gear yourself to the right music, you can get through anything. But this year seems to be especially hopeful. And that's what I wanted to do with the three songs you just heard and more on the way. The Crusaders from 1979. Joe Sample on the keys. Wilton Felder. Styx Hooper, Benny Finnerty, Paul Jackson Jr. helping out. Wayne Henderson, of course, not on this. And just a couple of things you might not know about this song, Street Life, with Randy Crawford there. Woo-hoo! Do you know, and I didn't even see the movie, and I certainly can't be paying attention to what's happening in music and in movies, but Street Life was featured in Sharkey's Machine, directed by Burt Reynolds in 1981, and in Jackie Brown, from Quentin Tarantino in 1997, just so you know. We wanted to do a song from each decade, so let's turn our attention back to 1965, Herbie Hancock, Maiden Voyage. Herbie wanted to do everything that was oceanic on this particular CD, and my God, what a masterpiece it was. Freddie Hubbard on the trumpet, George Coleman, Ron Carter, Tony Williams, just amazing musicians getting together and doing their thing. Actually, this was basically the Miles Davis band, but without Miles. And Herbie just paved the way for so many musicians who took a note from that particular sound and just went with it through the 60s and through the 70s. And still, my gosh, Herbie Hancock still going strong. Just announced a couple of days ago, actually, that he's going to be part of the lineup of the New Orleans Jazz Fest, May the 3rd through the 6th. And I'm excited because he's going to be at the Rose Theater at Lincoln Center in March, I believe, and then he's going to be at the Kennedy Center in D.C., close to my hood, in Baltimore on the 11th of March. So you better believe we're looking forward to Herbie Hancock. Got to see him again do his thing because he is just ready to roll in 2012. Don Mark to start the set. Don Mark from Philadelphia just played everywhere in the world with notable company. He found his own company, Nairomi, back in 1989. And this is a very cool endeavor because he wanted to, and this is a quote, inspire hope in children, spark their creative spirit, and transform their lives through the power of artistic expression. Part of the proceeds of all of the copies of In a New Light, and you heard Jubilation to start the set, they're going to go to this company that makes sure that children are taken care of. And that includes, by the way, making sure that they're fed, making sure they go to school. He, Don, and his wife have just done so much since 89 to make sure that comes to pass for a lot of kids. You heard Jesse Powers on bass, Johnny Jones on drums, Daoud Saeed, who does our opener and closer music, Larry Griffin on percussion on that track and all throughout the album, Greg Boyer, the great trombonist on the CD as well, Michael Mark on guitar on Jubilation there, and also a little taste or two from Roy Smith on guitar. Now, if you're in the area or if you're in the region, you might want to take note of this. Don Mark and Company, Fire Escape, his group, are going to be at Cat's Eye Pub tonight. I intend to go because it's always a party and a half when they're there. And this is just part of what they're going to experience in 2012 because they're going to be doing some heavy-duty touring. And I'm so excited that you can tell I just can't talk. I am really excited about 2012. I really am. And, man, can we just say thank you to 2011 for making sure that Sonny Rollins got his due? Oh, my. So sweet to see him on TV the other day. If you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll tell you after this. Sonny Rollins from 2006. This is from Sonny, Please. Apparently what Mrs. Rollins used to say to him all the time. This is Sonny's take on Stairway to the Stars on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Don't forget Maurice Johnson comes your way at the top of next hour.
Mm-hmm.
Love that song, and I am renewing a little kinship, musically speaking, with that lady, Madeline Peru, and Instead, from a well-received CD produced by Larry Klein in 2009, Bare Bones. All the songs on it were originals, and those Madeline fans were just having their tongues hanging out for some stuff from Madeline because we hadn't heard from her for a little bit. She is such an interesting lady. Her parents were, as she describes them, eccentric educators and hippies who divorced, and Madeline moved with her mom to Paris, which is where she started to sing. And man, what a very cool career she's had. Enough so that, you know, I'm not sure if you knew this or not, or whether you are well-versed on Madeline Peru, but on this particular album, two songs were co-written by Walter Becker of Steely Dan fame, and Walter does not fritter away his time with those who are considered fools. So this is pretty interesting to note that this lady cites as her primary inspirations Billie Holiday, Bessie Smith, Patsy Cline, Charlie Chaplin, Bob Dylan. Very eclectic and very, very private. She likes to keep information about herself exceedingly quiet, and at times she has reverted so much into her own scene that early on in her career she was doing quite well initially, then decided to pull in because she couldn't handle all the accolades and the attention. So she went back to waiting tables, clearing tables at restaurants in France. She's just very interesting, and I think that she has come out of another shell, and 2012 is going to be mind-blowing for folks who are Peru fans. So hang on to your hats. George Duke from 1975, Sister Serene, from an album that my son gave me for Christmas, I Love the Blues, She Heard Me Cry. She Heard My Cry. And our minds were blown, my son and I, because we were reading a little bit today. Apparently, at one time, this CD was not anywhere that was in a situation where you could buy it easily. People were selling it for like $120. This is the remastered CD, and my son got it for $6 at Soundgarden in Baltimore just a few days before Christmas, so all is well. You can really tell on this CD the effects of working with Frank Zappa, because George Duke was delving into some things that were a little bit different from what folks were going to expect to hear from him, because you know, George has been all over the page, and that's exactly where he wants to be. But on this song, it was just so loving and so positive a vibe as we faced 2012 that I had to do it. On Personnel, it was Leon Ndugu Chanclair, and he was doing drums. Byron Miller on bass, and man, I'm so psyched because January the 12th, which is going to be George Duke's 66th birthday, he's going to be at the Catalina Bar and Grill in Hollywood from his birthday and then spend the next couple of nights at the same place. And if there was a way for a sugar daddy or sugar mama to come through and say, come on, Trish, let's do this, I'd be there in a blink. George Duke and his birthday. Are you kidding me? Yeah. On the Verve label, by the way. I Love the Blues. She Heard My Cry. Sonny Rollins. If you saw TV the other day, Sonny was on the show with President and Michelle Obama, who were bopping their heads to what was going on the Kennedy Center stage. Now, it was recorded, but you could see it all unfold on television. The 34th Annual Kennedy Center Honors. Sonny Rollins got his, and it was just mind-blowing because Bill Cosby was the one who made sure folks knew about Sonny's life, which was and is wonderful. Sonny, 81 years old, still doing his thing. 2006, we heard from Sonny Please and Stairway to the Stars, which originally was done back in the 1930s, written by violinist Matt Marnick and pianist Frank Signorelli, with lyric by Mitchell Parrish. Sonny Rollins, meanwhile, his Road Shows Volume 2, is up for Best Jazz Instrumental Album of the Year from the Grammys and Best Improvisational Jazz Solo for Sonny Moon for 2. And named, by the way, Jazz Times Best Album of the Year. So Sonny keeps rolling on, doesn't he? And you might also want to pick up something, Stories from Yogic, P. people who have been immersed in different kinds of yoga, Sonny Rollins is one of those people, just so you know. Maurice Johnson coming your way in less than 10 minutes. Let's see if we can do another song or two, shall we? Can't wait to hear from Maurice and his life and some tracks from his CD tonight. Let's turn our attention in the meantime to Spyro Gyra. Three Wishes from Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
That song so many times in the past
several months or so, it's just ingrained into my consciousness. Let me put a bookmark in that thought. I want to tell you that we heard from Spira Gyra. Let me say this about three wishes. Many say that it is the best Spira Gyra album ever from 1992, their 16th album. Just amazing stuff there, especially Dave Samuels on the vibe work. Three Wishes, just so cool. We're hoping to get Scott Ambush on the show early in 2012. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. The song you just heard is from Maurice Johnson, For You, For Me, from the CD Tonight. Let me tell you something about Maurice Johnson. It's pretty rare that I can say that somebody is a Renaissance man. And I mean that with all my heart, because if you thought Maurice Johnson was just a guitarist who plays melodies that will haunt you like me day and night when it comes to a song like that, are you kidding? Maurice is also a performer, the nationally published author, music entrepreneur, the head of his own company, a designer, a builder of guitars. Should I stop, Maurice Johnson?
Well, you can if you wish.
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm just real good, and I see that you made your way into the chat room first. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Hey, no problem.
Yes, man. Maurice, seriously, that song, it's just so deep inside of me, as are several tunes from the CD Tonight. And one of the reasons, actually the main reason why I wanted to make sure you were here on the last show for 2011 is because you have so much to look forward to, don't you, in 2012?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Right now I have a lot on my plate, and I kind of keep it that way. Keeps me out of trouble.
Believe me, I hear it. You've got this new CD looming on the horizon. You want to tell us a little bit about that, a sneak peek?
Yeah, that's titled Peace, Love, and Jazz right now. And it's, you know, I'm as an artist, writer, what have you, I'm constantly expressing myself. So once again, this is simply an extension of that self-expression. You'll find when you finally hear that it's a lot different than the Tonight CD, but I'm still growing. I feel I'm still growing as a writer, songwriter, composer, what have you. And there's a lot of things I'd like to explore musically. So I believe a lot of that would be conveyed in Peace, Love, and Jazz.
Well, you know what, Maurice, I love to hear that, actually, because you know that the name of this show is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. So. Yeah. Look, you do what you need to do. Gosh, this has been a subject for conversation so much with different artists that we've had on the show. You've got to explore the different ways and means and deep-seated feelings that you have about the music that you play. Otherwise, it's not going to be authentic. You know that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gosh, you want to tell us how it will be a little different? Because I'm curious.
Well, you know, I've played the guitar for about a good 35 years now.
Yeah.
A lot of us, if we're not careful, I'll say guitar players, will get wrapped up in, you know, trying to write and record unconsciously or unknowingly ourselves for other guitar players to hear, and not our common audience, our general audience. So although this music on this particular album obviously is guitar-oriented, but it's not always about the guitar. It's simply about expressing the music. And to me, it's somewhat of a journey, a musical journey. That's why, you know, initially I had the concept of a trilogy, actually a trilogy project, Peace, Love, and Jazz. But I thought rather than confuse the public, I'd put it all out in just one product right now, one album. But once again, it's a story, a walk, and I call it a journey, A journey to peace, love, and jazz.
I actually love that, Maurice, because, you know, we've had discussions, you've had them with your friends and colleagues, people that you've played with through the years about the healing elements of jazz.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, when you say that all, nobody's going to forget that title, Peace, Love, and Jazz. Hold on to that.
I'm trying to. There, a little bit at a time, if you know, I kind of end a lot of my statements on Facebook there with that. So I'm kind of trying to get everybody accustomed to hearing that or seeing it.
Well, what do the people who listen to you, your fan base, what do they say to you about what they feel when they hear your music? Because you've got a lot of people that say a lot of loving things on your wall, I've noticed, on Facebook. What kind of feedback do you get from them?
Well, one thing that I get, one of the biggest things I get, a lot of people feel the emotion. And when I can get my listening audience to feel what I feel I've really achieved something. And that's what it's all about for me. It's not necessarily just hearing the notes, the melodic passages. It's actually feeling the passion and the emotion that I put into it, put into every note. I feel I'm a pretty expressive individual. And since I'm not a singer, my guitar does the singing for me, and I'm pretty emotional with it at times. And that's, you know, it's very difficult as a recording artist to convey that sometimes or capture that in a recording, in a studio environment. So when I'm in a live situation, you know, things are a lot different. So I kind of go out there sometimes and I really pour myself into it rather than trying to be so careful or precise in a studio environment. But it's the emotion. That's what a lot of people say to me. They feel the passion and emotion.
You know what? This is so interesting. I never thought about this before. You just said what you said, but I would imagine that from your statement, you pour everything you have into your instrument because you don't sing. Maybe that's akin to what the experience has been for Stevie Wonder.
Absolutely.
He can't see, so he puts everything into that keyboard.
Absolutely. You're exactly right. We compensate for what we may be lacking, so to speak. So right now, that I haven't utilized my voice. Now, I've done some things in private, but I haven't built up the courage to do it publicly yet.
Right.
So right now, like I said, I pour it all into every note when I perform. So that's very important. And that's, I believe that's one thing that helps me emote or helps my audience feel what I'm feeling.
And just so folks know about the background of Maurice Johnson, oh, my gosh. I mean, this is a seasoned veteran who has played in a lot of places. 1985 with the group After Five, has played with George Benson, George Howard, who I just adore from Philly, my hometown, Norman Brown, Nancy Wilson, Al Green, Alex Bunyan, Stanley Turrentine. Good God. Maurice.
Yes. Yes, those were some fun times. They really were.
And then, not even skimming the surface of what your life has been, let alone your music career, because after the group disbanded, from what I understand, mm-hmm. you delved into another business to become a member of this instrument family, and you designed and marketed Archtop guitars. How did that come to pass?
Yeah, that's truly a story within itself, and one day I'll convey that. I actually put something on Facebook titled The Story of Delico Guitars. That was the name of a company. So I'm not going to take all that credit, and that was myself and a business partner by the name of James W. Dale.
Right.
James W. Dale was the actual luthier, the actual builder. I was more the marketer, and handled all the business and licensing and did some work in the shop, but he was truly the builder. And yes, and I had a generous hand in designing instruments, even the one that I play today. So that was quite an experience. But the way that story goes is my former band, After Five Jazz, back in the early 90s, we were at a rehearsal, and there was a mutual friend that knew me and the individual, James W. Dale, that was building the guitar. And every time he'd see me, he'd always say, Maurice, man, I've got a friend who's building the guitar, man, I want you to see it. And, you know, I'd kind of blow it off because I'm thinking, okay, there's some young kid building a solid body Strat kind of guitar, you know, that kind of thing. And I didn't really pay much mind to it until one day I was dropped off at a rehearsal. I didn't have my car. So he said, Maurice, I'll take you home if you let me take you by here and introduce you to Jim. I said, okay. So that's the way he got me over there. So we went over there, and he introduced me to Jim, and I expected him to point through the door and say it's around there, around the corner, but I actually saw an instrument leaning against the wall. It was an archtop guitar, big jazz box. But it was raw, it was unpainted, unfinished. So that was very unique. So he said, there it is. So he was already in a building stage, experimental, so to speak. He was a cabinet builder for many years. So I picked this instrument up, and this instrument actually had no identity yet, meaning the headstock, the brand, the name, the logo, so to speak, was not there. It was just a general concept that he had in his mind. I think he had a piece of paper with something sketched. So it was still in its concept stage. And as soon as I saw that, as soon as I touched it, the marketer inside me just kind of light it up. And all kinds of things just kind of happened. And before you knew it, I was at Jim's house every day, just bugging the heck out of this guy. And he was just building. He didn't know how to market or, have any ideas of marketing, but I had all these crazy ideas. But over time, we became like silent partners. It was really strange. It was kind of unspoken. And then after a while, we established a corporation and called ourselves DeLico Guitars. And I've been in the arts for many years. I was a graphic artist and studied art education in college. And I had the privilege of designing the logo, the headstock, because that's the thing that, that everybody identifies a particular instrument with.
Right.
Especially an instrument of that caliber. I wanted it to be something very nice. So it took some time, and we designed that, and that was actually embedded in the headstock. We actually carved slab pearl. That was very interesting. But over time, we were building this. And the unique thing about us being in Oklahoma, a lot of the jazz, a lot of the luthiers, you can stop me if I'm going too long with this.
Oh, no, please. I love it. This is the story, and I want to hear the story.
But a lot of the prominent luthiers with the big jazz boxes, were usually out of New York. A lot of them had kind of an Italian flair to their name, D'Angelico, D'Acquisto, so forth and so on. And the way we came up with DeLico, to kind of give it that kind of sound, it's a contraction of the words Dale, his last name, James W. Dale, and company. So
that's cool.
So we put a little accent mark there and just called it DeLico. It was very cool. So subsequently, over time, to be taken serious, we never thought we would be taken serious in the archtop or guitar building industry, because during that time it was only a handful of luthiers building handcrafted archtop guitars, because they were not manufactured. We had like a year waiting list, that kind of thing, and some luthiers had about 5 years. Some of the popular guys, people would literally wait that long to receive their instrument. So that's what that instrument is. But one thing that kind of tied us, we were here in Oklahoma in the land or home of Charlie Christian.
Yes.
And when our shop was situated a few short blocks from where Charlie Christian, would go hang out and play down in the Deep Deuce area. And we were fortunate enough to be invited to an event honoring Charlie Christian. And that's where we actually got the privilege of meeting Charlie Christian's daughter. A lot of people didn't realize she even existed. Her name was Billie Jean Christian. And Charlie Christian's wife, his common-law wife, Margareta Downey, was still alive as well. She was quite old. But no one was really familiar with him in any capacity.
How about that?
So when we met her, we had asked her, had anybody, had any guitar companies ever approached her about building an instrument in honor of her father? And she said no. And we kind of looked at each other. And I think this event was somewhere like in Texas. So as soon as that event was over, we jumped in the car and came back to Oklahoma City and contacted our attorney. And we ended up drafting an agreement, and we were able to work out an agreement with the family of Charlie Christian. And we were able over time to acquire a posthumous trademark for the Charlie Christian name.
That's great.
Which gave us the authority to negotiate deals with manufacturers in the name of Charlie Christian. So we would attend some of the music trade shows, like the NAMM shows in Nashville and in California, National Association of Music Merchants. And there we met Samick Guitars. At the time, Samick was considered one of the world's largest guitar manufacturers. They built many, many guitars. and we proposed the idea to them, and they immediately jumped on it. So the end result was three guitars, three models that went into production, and two of those models I have right now. They were in production for about 2.5 years, and when that came to a demise, that relationship, we did a deal with Gibson, and they produced a limited edition of Charlie Christian models, legitimate Charlie Christian models. And here we are today.
Maurice, you are on it. Oh, my God. I told folks you are a Renaissance man. Look, to be able to do all of that, to have the business expertise, to have had a hand in design, to have followed through on the relationship with Charlie Christian's daughter, and then to see the fruition of that with two record companies. Dude, that's hot.
It was quite an experience. It was truly an experience. You know, it was a path I had never taken before. I honestly didn't know what I was doing, but, you know, one thing that I learned, if you don't ask a question, you don't know what the answer will be, no matter
That's right. And another thing I learned, too, after having worked at QVC for 3 years, squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Absolutely. That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody brought that to mind today because there is a fellow that's on Facebook that is a regionally known fellow, but he's not necessarily nationally known, although folks might have heard of his particular expertise on an instrument. So he said to me in something that I had exchanged back and forth with him, I said, I would like to talk to you about doing something in 2012 as far as the show is concerned. And he said, I'm not hiding. You know where to find me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I guess that would be considered cool in some circles. But honestly, people don't assume that you are where they think you are. You, as a marketer and a promotion person, know that you constantly have to say to folks, here I am, here I am, here I am.
Absolutely.
And look what it's gained you. Holy cow.
I'm still trying to get there. But, yes, I'm a firm believer in that. I truly am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the situation is that you have been an entrepreneur to a degree where you can take care of the truly passionate creativity that you have towards your music. You're able to do that because you've taken care of business on the other end.
Yes, I would say so, yes.
Yeah, well, that's cool. My gosh. And the books, this is another aspect of you. Three nationally published music books. You care to tell us about that?
Well, the way that kind of came about was when I started the After Five Band in 1985, we were together for nearly 10 years. I think we broke up in 93, so almost 10 years. And over the course of time, we were quite a popular band in this area, very popular, and that's how we were fortunate enough to share the stage with a lot of prominent artists out there. And but for whatever reason, a lot of musicians would come to me. They would approach me and ask me questions. They'd ask me questions like, Maurice, should we use a contractor? How much should I charge for a gig? All these kind of things. They would ask me these business-type questions. And I'm wondering to myself, I'm saying, why in the world are these people asking me these questions? I mean, because it would happen a lot. And it seemed over time that I would begin to transition to this musician's advocate, so to speak. And in the early 80s, I had self-published a book, or let's say a planner. It was called Gigs Monthly Planner for the Professional Musician. I had financed that, designed it, and published it, and I was able to get it in a few of the local music stores. And shortly thereafter, I mean, they took an interest in it, and I was very appreciative of that. And lo and behold, one of the jobbers came to me and wanted to place an order. So he placed an order of so many dozen, and I gave them to him. And he was able to disperse my product throughout several states. And about a week later, he called me on a Sunday morning and said, Maurice, I need another six dozen. So I was really kind of impressed by that. So it kind of had something. And lo and behold, over time, I would meet people who, you know, say they had my book, so forth and so on. But I really wanted to write something, a real book. But as time went on, I knew that concept had potential. So in 1996, I proposed the idea to a very popular music publisher that a lot of early musicians are acquainted with, is Mel Bay Publishing. A lot of cut our teeth on Mel Bay books. And I proposed it to Mel Bay, and it was, what was interesting about that, he immediately took it. It was really strange because there was a NAMM show due to that was coming up in California about 2 months after we, you know, did the deal with that book. And that book was called The New Working Musician's One-Year Organizer, which was really my early Gigs Monthly Planner. I had updated it and done some things. But anyway, he accelerated his print schedule, and within 2 months he published the book and made sure it was at the upcoming NAMM show.
Just wow. After
we ended up signing the deal. So that was cool. But I still had a desire to really write and pen a book. So over time, I began to, since musicians were, for whatever reason, coming to me asking me questions, I said, well, let me just write down some information, some things that I've learned over time. And a lot of it's just common sense information. And I had proposed this book, worked with this book, and proposed it to several publishers. It wasn't really easy to get this particular, you know, get this one published, but it finally happened. And like you said, it was through the process of the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
And
I actually had a couple of publishers kind of bidding for the book. It was really cool. But
oh, man.
In 1999, Mixed Books, I did a deal with the Mixed Books, and I had written a book titled Build and Manage Your Music Career. That was a very popular book for about 8 or 9 years. And it was out there. You can still find it out there somewhere on the internet here and there. But it did real well. I did a lot of book signings and things like that, and it helped, you know, it helped to kind of facilitate some of the a path or direction that I wanted to go, wanted to head. And so I'd gained a pretty decent relationship with that publisher, and I had there was an online review of my earlier book, The New Working Musician's One-Year Organizer, and the reviewer said it would be great if this was a software product. And once again, that bell's just kind of rung in my head there.
Wow.
So I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never done anything like this. So I started researching programming and how to find programmers. And I started writing, you know, the feature set for the idea for the software, how I wanted it to work and what I wanted to do, so forth and so on. So I was able to come up with a couple of programmers, and I engaged in a relationship with them. And we wrote some preliminary code. And after a while, Gigorama, the software, was born. That was created, I think, that came out. And that also came out in 99, the same year that my second book, Building Manager Music Career, came out. So that came out. And that did real well. I had to marketed that online on my own site, Gigorama.com, which is no longer with us, no longer the case. But I had during that time, I had proposed, one of my publishers had entertained the thought or had approached me about buying my software. And you know, we as entrepreneurs, one of the traps that we fall into is we get emotionally attached to what it is that we're into.
Especially if you're an artistic person like yourself.
Yeah, so whatever they offer you, say, no, I'll never sell it. And so that's right. But never sold it. So I had to think my way around it. And so what I did, I proposed to them, I proposed a licensing deal and another book deal. So I was able to orchestrate a new book deal, which was an addendum to Build and Manage Your Music Career, which was a pretty popular book. In conjunction with that, the second half of it ended up being the user guide to Gigorama software. So I licensed my Gigorama software to them rather than selling it to them. And so because we signed a non-compete clause, I didn't want it to shut me down, so I had my programmer develop me another version of Gigorama that had some other features that did not compete with it. So that allowed me to continue to solicit my software, my version of the software, while my publisher at the same time was was pushing my software along with a book. That book was titled Gigorama. So
you are shrewd. Oh, my God. Man, I hope that you're continuing to take notes, Maurice, because, you know, about a year or so ago, I had been encouraged to keep a diary or blog, whatever, so that I could have a book out. And you need to take ongoing notes so that you can continue to help people, because there's part of you that so many artists need to know about your expertise. And then there's another part of you that is so creative that you know how to protect everything that you've already done. God, how did you get this business acumen inside of you?
I don't know. It's kind of strange. It's always been a constant tug of war within me. I've always been let's say, artistic individual. I always wanted to express myself artistically, and I was flooded with ideas that just kind of came in my head. But in order to bring them to life, so to speak, I had to learn some aspects of business. And when I was, you know, proposing, you know, guitar deals, book deals, software deals, so forth and so on, I didn't know what I was doing. I was winging it, learning as I went. So, but it was very interesting. There was one time, and this was an interesting story. Since Samick, who produced our guitar, the instrument that I play today is that's one of the Samick models. They're out of Korea, their main plant. When they introduced the prototypes at the NAMM show in California, my liaison from California, from the California office, was there that I had communicated with throughout our negotiations and relationship. And one of the plant managers from Korea had flown to the States. So, and here's this is the biggest guitar manufacturer in the world, and here I am connected to a small company, myself and one other individual out of Oklahoma. And here we are in California, and the plant manager is asking me questions about this guitar, and this guitar turned out to be one of their most expensive models as well. We did all that talking through a translator, and I thought that was very fascinating. So here I am telling this guitar manufacturer, the world's largest guitar manufacturer, how to build our guitar and what to look out for, little specific details, things like that. So, if people who have looked at my guitar, we have something called a broken pediment on our crown, the headstock of our instrument, and in the midst of that rests a simulated pearl. So when we went into production, we had to send simulated pearls to Samick because they couldn't find them.
Really?
So to produce that guitar. So very interesting.
Oh, at least I had some idea about some of this, but no idea about all. Thank you for fleshing out that story. Well, let's folks delve into that primary piece of you. The reason why I wanted you to be on the show so much, because I knew that you had a whole lot of stories under one umbrella. But God, Maurice, that's a trip. Oh. Well, I just want to let folks know that this is one of the many accolades that this man has received. This is from 20th Century Guitar Magazine in New York. In the world of music and entertainment, where first impressions can count for everything, Maurice Johnson impresses with elan. Most importantly, he swings mightily in every context. He is a very impressive musician. That's some high praise, Maurice.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So.
Well, people need to know what this vibe is all about. And, of course, you know one of the tracks I love is Black Coffee, Please.
Okay.
You are a coffee connoisseur, are you not?
Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, I fixed the fresh pot of coffee before this interview.
Me too. This is Maurice Johnson from his CD Tonight and Black Coffee, Please on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and I must tell you that Maurice Johnson is feeling the love in the chat room. Let me tell you something. Not only because of the track that you just heard, Black Coffee Please, from Maurice's CD Tonight, but good heavens, friends in common, things in common. You are getting some major love from Griselda in Texas and Debbie Poole in Baltimore. Maurice, aren't you glad you came by today?
Yes, I really am. I truly am. I appreciate you for inviting me, Trish. I really do. And it's very good to see everyone out there and all the support they show. I love that. It's great.
And this is the cool thing. I mean, Maurice, I'll tell you the truth, and you probably know this because I know that we're no strangers on Facebook. We go back and forth to each other's walls at least a little bit, but this is the whole idea. Once you're involved in a scenario where we're here in this forum together, and you are getting some folks that are paying attention to you as you speak, and then through the archives that are from the States, that are from overseas, different parts of the world coming together in different time zones. That is so impressive. That's so important because it just bodes well. I see it with this show, that the audience is growing and growing, and it's because people are hungering to hear jazz the way you do it, the way it's supposed to be done, with passion and creativity. And do you find that wherever you go, and as we're heading into the new year, things are just looking really hopeful?
Yes, they are. You know, I always try to keep a positive outlook, no matter, even, and I don't want to sound cliche, I have to say in the face of adversity, let's say that.
Right.
Because it's very important. You, a person has to be tough, especially in this business. And always, it's very good to keep a positive attitude and always look up. We'll be challenged many times. I find myself that way as well. But I always have to find that brighter side. It's very important. Once again, that's another thing that I'm passionate about, and I believe in what I do, and I consider myself very tenacious, and that's something that I try to tell a lot of young musicians or musicians my age. You know, it takes tenacity, it really does. But and a good outlook. So yes, I choose to see things looking up rather than going south, so to speak.
Well, I do too. I'm a very spiritual person, and I have a lot of faith that God has my back, and my God, He's taken care of me this far, and I know that things are going to be well because I'm trying to be so obedient. But you know, even apart from that. And I never want to say things apart from that, but I see 2012 as the culmination of what jazz musicians have been attempting to do since the doors have closed on some of the jazz stations. Mm-hmm. They have grown out of themselves. They have expanded their horizons. They've gotten out of the box that they had been in.
That's correct.
In that adversity, in those adverse circumstances that people found themselves in, they found a way to be creative. And now all of that kind of amazing artistry is coming into focus in this new year, and there's going to be a way for all of it to be heard.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, this, the music industry itself, it's literally rewriting itself. You know, it's almost gone are the days of the bricks-and-mortar music stores. You know, where you could walk in and buy a CD. We can no longer say album. You find them at some type of whatnot shop or antique shop, so to speak, something like that. But yeah, there's a significant trend occurring in the entire industry for everyone.
Yeah, I really do feel that. And man, I can't wait to hear what the next step of what you're going to do is with this next CD, how on earth do you find the time in a given day to carve out space for writing music? Because, my gosh, you wrote every single song on Tonight, and I assume that's what you're doing for the new CD out in the new year.
Well, yes, and I have to say, I have to answer that in three words. It's my job. So when I'm not gigging, I'm writing. And, you know, when I'm not in front of my computer recording or what have you, music is constantly being composed in my head. And sometimes I just can't get it out fast enough. So there's all kinds of concepts, whether it's music and or whatever. You know, I've been, you know, have writing ideas and other things that I've been working on. I find myself being an octopus. But, you know, over the years, since I've done all of these different things, somebody stopped and told me once, and I'll never forget it. And she told me, she was a much older lady. She said, Maurice, I was playing at some place in Orlando with a band, and she stopped me and she said, Maurice, do the thing that you do best and stick with it.
Mm.
And that went a long way. You know, for many years I had kind of denied it because I was so, there was so much inside of me that wanted to come out. And that's something I realized today. And the thing that I feel that I do best is, it's music. It's, you know, it's the guitar. And now, now that my focus is on my music 100%, I feel that I can produce more vividly now, because my ideas and things like that lay dormant for many years, a good 16 years. So Tonight represents me a true renaissance, a reawakening, so to speak, me coming back. So and I have to say, I'm just getting started actually.
And you know what? This is not the kind of question that I would usually ask, but you spark something in me that just runs with this. Do you find now that when you first started out, and you must have had an inspiration 2 or 3 or 300 when you were starting out as far as why you wanted to play the guitar, do you now find these many years later that you go back to those inspirations, they resonate in your head even more? You go back to that little boy that you once were and feel like you're drawing from those inspirations anew?
Exactly. Exactly. The initial inspiration actually came from my brother. I had an older brother who was like a father to me as well. And I don't want to segue into another story here, but I will say this. Among the many things that I like to do, because my mind is so busy, I also write and record a narrative called Soliloquy, and you can find some of those. And the story of the excerpts from my own personal autobiography, just simple excerpts. So I set them to music in the background, and I just speak, and I tell people the story of little glimpses of my life coming through. But anyway, that started with my brother when he came back from Vietnam. He brought with him a guitar. And, you know, a lot of us, I was the youngest child out of six, and he was my second to the oldest brother, but I was very close to him. And a lot of us who have older siblings, we have a tendency to idolize some of our siblings or what have you. And you want to be like that person. So if he had a guitar, I wanted to play guitar. So my brother understood that, so he paid for my first guitar lessons, and he bought me my first guitar, and he really pushed me. He pushed me every chance he got. From that point, my true inspiration for playing jazz, I'd have to say, if I have to give it to an artist, and you probably hear it, is George Benson.
Mm.
So George is the number one component in this whole equation to me, and that's a story within itself. So as a young kid, fledgling with the guitar, just playing anything, just kind of sucking up anything I could learn. And one day, I believe in 1976, I heard something on the radio. This guy playing the guitar, and I hear his voice singing on top of it. And as soon as I heard it, I instantly told myself, I instantly said, that's the way I want to play. Very excited. And I ran to the record store, and I didn't know who it was, and I described what I heard. He said, oh, that was George Benson, Breezin'. And that so I bought the album. I tore off the cellophane, very excited. And I put it on, listened to it, and I actually did this. I literally put my guitar in the closet for about 2 weeks because I told myself if I'm going to approach this style, you know, this type of plane, or even acquire this type of ability, I'm going to have to come up with a system and really study it. So I just listened. I really listened. But he influenced me tremendously. Him in conjunction with Montgomery, but George's, I have to say, is it.
My goodness. And honestly, it was not that far away from 1976 where you got involved in your group. So, I mean, it just seems to me that you started to play that guitar and things started to happen just because of the discipline that you had in delving into the guitar and being inspired. You hit the ground running.
I kind of did. I really did. I have a tendency to pour, you know, like, once again, if it's something I truly believe in and really feel, I pour myself into it wholeheartedly, despite what other people say. But I believe that's very important in order to progress.
Now, did you have a lot of naysayers along the way, Maurice?
No. You know, from the standpoint of academia, you know, yeah, I spent a few years in college. I didn't get a doctorate or anything like that, but
right.
But the music really kind of, the music and arts kind of absorbed me. I was an artist long before I was a musician, before I even thought about music or guitar. But those things really stuck with me and became deeply ingrained into me and who I am today.
Well, my gosh, who you are today is somebody that makes most of us exhausted.
I make myself exhausted.
Oh my gosh. And meanwhile, your Facebook page is just so laid back. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but you are just laid back.
I consider myself pretty laid back. I'm kind of shy, to be honest.
Really? Well, you're doing well. You had a little bit of trepidation for this interview, didn't you?
Yeah, I get a little nervous with the interviews. I never know what they're going to ask or where it's going to go or, you know, those kind of things.
Nah, that's the whole beauty of doing this for me. It's just delving into the amazing length and breadth of what a creative person does and how all of that culminates in the truth in your music, because that's what you want to do. I mean, I hear it, and most of the guests that I have on here, they're all about making sure that what they are and what they do is the absolute truth. The authentic Maurice Johnson is in your music.
And I try to keep it there. And that's very important with all of us, yeah, for a generous portion of ourselves to be in what we do. Certainly don't want to be like a machine.
No. Oh, gosh, no. And that's what I mean when I say that because doors were closed in the faces of so many artists, they thought, because of the contemporary jazz stations going away,
mm-hmm.
Now they had to turn their attention. Actually, it's just like what J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, said in a commencement speech at Harvard in 2008. Mm-hmm. She said, I had to face poverty, so that meant I had nothing. So if I had nothing, I had to go within and find out what I wanted to do most, because nothing else mattered.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
I just love that. And you've got so many pies that are in the oven, so many of these plates that you're spinning in the air. I think that even creates more artistic expression than the average bear, don't you?
I think it does. But, you know, one thing that I really try to do is trying to keep my focus on the one thing, like I said, when this lady told me, stick with what you do best, and I feel it's music. But all those other things that I did took my attention away from the guitar. You know, I kind of replaced my guitar with a briefcase, and you know, I'm flying around the country doing trade shows, things like that. And I long to, you know, to be recognized for what I do, and that's play guitar. So I sat on the sideline and built guitars and endorsed other guitar players and things like that. But I feel it's time for me to focus on this right now until I get enough of this out where I feel comfortable and could possibly spread out and kind of do some other things again a little bit at a time.
And we'll play a third track from tonight, and I want to have you keep a bookmark in that thought and let us know what is it, and you can be thinking, what is it that you want to achieve with this next CD, because there's different ways to go when another CD comes out. So, yeah. And I told you that some tunes resonated with me. I love all of them on tonight, but of course, on the radio, just hit me right in the right place.
Yeah, and I will tell you, someone had posted here in the chat, did I know guitarist by the name of Gary Fuston, and I conveyed to them, Gary Fuston is a very good friend of mine, and Gary and I co-wrote this song several years ago, and we've had a great chemistry as co-authors in the studio over time, so I wanted to put this one on this album, so it speaks volumes about when we put both our heads and minds together collectively and artistically, what can come out of it.
Oh, man, I love that. Well, how fortuitous that we're going to play this. That's great. Maurice Johnson is our guest today on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and this is On the Radio from the CD Tonight.
Thank you.
Johnson on the radio from the CD Tonight on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Maurice, that is some, man, it's just such depth of guitar work, and I love the fact that you've been doing this for so many years. It's like second nature to you, isn't it? What would you do if you didn't have the guitar to play?
Oh, my. I got to tell you, it would be quite frustrating.
Wow.
I would immerse myself on Lackley Art. I do a lot of graphics as well and writing, but yeah, it'd be frustrating.
Yeah.
I will tell you this as well, and once upon a time, many, many years ago, I worked in the oil field as a roughneck. Now, that was some hard work, and it's kind of crazy, you know, being a guitar player.
Oh, but yeah.
Sometimes we'd be out on a rig for several months doing a fishing job or some big job or something like that. And I would take a guitar with me, an acoustic guitar. And sometimes we'd work so hard, you know, 12-hour shifts in the hot sun, things like that. And we'd be tripping pipe going in and out of the hole, so to speak. And out of boredom, we just do some crazy things. And sometimes I would do something called throwing the chain, which is extremely dangerous. I could have lost my life, a hand, or anything, you know. But anyway, there's some times I would tell everybody to stop, wait. And we're in the hot sun, you know, and the driller would hit the brakes, the dairy can would stop, and everybody just pauses. And I would slowly pull off my glove because they all knew I played guitar. And I was slow, and everybody's looking at me. I slowly pulled off my glove, and I said, "Man, I thought I broke a fingernail." But we go back to work.
Oh, you were comic relief there.
It was great. We were bored.
My God, you were a roughneck, too. I can't believe it. Lord, what haven't you done?
In 6 years, I was in very good shape, I got to tell you. I'll never do that again.
I'll betcha. Oh, so now that you see, I mean, obviously tonight has been successful for you, and you're going to have this new CD come out in 2012. What would you like to have happen with it? What do you foresee?
Well, with every project or with every new album, new CD, so to speak, I want to share a little more of me with my audience, a little bit more of me inside, deep inside, rather than superficial, just playing notes. It's the depth of the music. I have you'll notice when this album comes out, and I'll kind of give you a clue. There's a track titled, the name of the track is titled Man. And a few weeks ago, I had posted on Facebook, and I asked the question, what is the definition of man, or what is the meaning of man? So I'm not going to go any further with that, but look for that track. It's titled Man. So I really want people to see a little bit more in depth inside my head and inside my heart.
That's cool. That's cool. And then when it comes out, if there's a scenario whereby it blows up more than you ever anticipated, are you fully prepared to tour?
I am prepared, yes. I'm prepared, I'll say ready, willing, and able. So there's a lot of preparation that comes with that. But, yes, that's something that is on my mind, and I'd have to become fully acclimated to that. But, yes, I'm truly open to that and have a desire and interest to do that. And, yes, absolutely.
That's something, because I would imagine that a band that you assemble for being on the road is a sight and ear candy to behold.
I imagine it would be. But yeah, that's something that's definitely on my mind, and you know, and definitely in the works. But once again, that's something I have to, when the time is right, I should become prepared and acclimated to that. But one of the biggest things, one of my biggest concerns when I first came out, let's say with tonight, was if there would be an appreciation out there for music. You know, I'd been out of the scene for so long, good 16
years.
And what happens if you're not out there active, a lot of times your confidence and even faith in your own self can begin to wane. And so it can be a true challenge to overcome. But I've seen so much, you know, I've seen so much support, you know, out here, especially on the social network and in public, things of that nature. It's been overwhelming, and I truly, truly appreciate it. That makes it all worth it. And I tell a lot of fans that come and approach me and and truly show their appreciation, whether it's at a performance or online or whatever, that's what it's all about. It's not all about the money. Yeah, it's good to have money, sustain yourself, so forth and so on, but it's that appreciation, and it's good to know that somebody out there cares and digs what you do, and that's very important. That really, really touches me, and I have to say, I need that, and I think we all need that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Honestly, from what I see, when you do post where you're going to be and playing in and around Oklahoma City, you've got legions of fans there. So that speaks volumes about what you'd do if you toured elsewhere.
Yeah. I'm truly curious to see how that would work out.
Truly, yeah. Well, me too. And I know that it's going to be like crazy because – you did something that's so mind-blowing that you posted on my Facebook page. I love that that piece that you created talking about that you were going to be on the show today.
I just wanted to do something different. And like I said, my mind is always busy when I'm between songs or something. We had just finished rehearsal last night, and I've been attending. I noticed I hadn't posted links, an adequate number of links, so forth and so on, or I've been as attentive as I should to make everyone aware of this show for today. So I wanted to do something that they would that they would see, that they would notice when they came to my page. So I love art and love graphics, so I said, well, let me do this.
it was great. So I know that this whole package with the CD and the artwork, the assembly of the band that I know is going to do some gigs in 2012, no absolute worries at all, Maurice. This is just going to be a wonder-filled year for you. You know it, don't you?
I anticipate that. I truly do.
Yeah, well, we just have a newcomer to the chat room. Cynthia says, Maurice is such a fantastic artist. Can't wait for his new CD.
Cynthia's a wonderful friend. I've known her for many years. Thank you.
Oh, great. This is great. So now you know that we're going to wrap up this show momentarily, and the archive will be done really soon. So all of those thoughts and those plans and those dreams for the upcoming year will be fully focused, because I'll make sure I get it posted to your page. And anything that you do in this upcoming year as far as the CD is concerned, shoot, when it's just about to drop, we'll have you back.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely be talking to you again, and thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Is there anything else that you'd like to say? Leave us with some closing thoughts. I'd love to hear them.
Well, once again, I want to say thank you to everyone who's joined in, everybody on the chat, everybody out there who's listening, and I appreciate you guys. But just keep an eye out for me. It's my new CD, Peace, Love, and Jazz. Make your presence known. Check me out on Facebook. Send me an email. You can email me at info@mauricejohnson.com. I'm quite approachable, so let me know you're there. I appreciate it.
God bless you. Yes. You are certainly a person that's going to be uppermost in my mind, Maurice, as truly the definitive Renaissance man. And actually, I think that you're going to inspire folks that didn't know that they were going to be inspired, because there's much work to do for all of us in 2012, and I think you just lit a fire up our collective arses.
Well, they lit a fire in me. They truly did.
That's great. Happy New Year to you. Everybody in the chat room says that, and blessings to you for the upcoming year. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year, everyone. Have a great day.
You too, Maurice.
Thanks, Trish.
Bye-bye. Man alive, let me tell you something. Having an artist of that kind of caliber who has done so much as far as creative endeavors means absolutely everything. We need to know that folks are out there like Maurice Johnson who are making sure that whatever they need to do, whatever good they can contribute in the world, whatever needs to get done, gets done. As opposed to, and as Madeleine Peyrou says, instead of making excuses, choose to be happy, choose to be busy, choose to know that you are going to get heard eventually. And instead of thinking eventually, think of right now. We're going to leave on this note. We have to play this. I promised folks on Facebook, and we'll wait for the Art Blakey tune for next time around, because a track I had in mind perfectly suits our next show, which is on January 3rd, by the way, with New Daddy, Tony Bunn, rocket scientist and bass player, who is on his way to see his new daughter for the first time. So I'm keeping Tony Bunn in my prayers, and I hope that anybody who's listening, you keep him in your prayers as well. And I want to turn our attention to the song that I think is one of the songs that we need to play as we close out 2011 and say hello to the year ahead. This is Diane Reeves and Better Days on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
There were four generations of love on her face. She was so wise, no surprise, past her eyes. She needed it all. I was child, or about three or four. All day
Grandma yawned as she stretched thin.
that's the way to do it. Woo! Better days. They are coming. Diane Reeves from 1987. Oh, my. Man, she had some personnel on that album. Let me tell you something. George Duke, Stanley Clark. She had Ricky Lawson on there, Freddie Hubbard, Herbie Hancock. Everybody and his mama wanted to play. Maybe there's a little bit of the fact that George Duke and Diane Reeves are cousins. I don't know. I don't know if it was a family thing or just folks just wanted to play. But in any case, that seems to be the best way to say Happy New Year to you. Diane Reeves is going to have one. Matter of fact, she is coming to the Washington, D.C. area, and that's days shy away from whether she finds out or not, because I know she's going to be busy touring. She's not going to be at the Grammy Award show, from what I understand, but come February the 12th, she will find out if she, as part of the large ensemble of female musicians that were part of the Mosaic Project from Terry Lynn Carrington, will win that Grammy for Best Vocal Jazz Performance. That is so awesome. Diane is already a four-time Grammy Award winner, and there's a possibility that she, as part of this amazing situation that Terry Lynn Carrington put together, she might win again. I'm just so tickled by that. Oh, my gosh. Diane Reeves, just amazing talent out there, whether it's local, regional, whether it's national or international. This show, Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, is all about making sure that all of those folks get played side by side, especially the folks who are independent artists who might not have the backing of a record label. Ultimately, it means nothing to me, although there are some wonderful labels out there, Blue Note and Verve and all those other guys. Trippin' and Rhythm did so well in the end-of-year survey, according to Billboard magazine. I'm happy for all of those folks. But anytime there's somebody who gets brought to my attention, I just love the fact that their heart and soul shines through, just like Maurice Johnson. And I can't say enough about thanking him for spending time with us on the show today. Next time around, as we mentioned, Tony Bunn on January the 3rd, 2012. Ooh. And we are completely booked for the month of January. So thank you for everybody who made that possible, too. God bless you. Thank you for all your support, Griselda and Matt and Debbie and Maurice and the many folks that we had come and go, including Peter, who spent actually time with his grandson at McDonald's today listening to the show. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. May God be with you. Drive safely and have a wonderful introduction to the new year as we say goodbye to 2011. Bless you.